The Manitoba Association of Christian Homeschools would like to thank the Learning House for sponsoring this recording.
This should be an interesting, I've never spoken at a venue like this before, so this is quite different, quite unique, but we're here to talk about a very important topic, which every one of you have to deal with on a daily basis, and of course we all know what that is, money. And money is significantly important for a few reasons, but discipleship is more of what it's about. So what I want you to understand is that we are all called to be financial disciples. Now, I'm going to see if this will work, and maybe it is not going to work. So, Kathy, I'm going to ask you to just to advance my slide. Kathy, if you could just advance my slide, please, on the computer, that would be helpful. I guess I'm too far away for it to actually work for me. So the I'm doing this topic based on a book by Brian Holtz. Brian Holtz is the CEO of Compass in the U.S., and he wrote this book, Financial Discipleship for Families, which is quite interesting and walks through how you help your children financially and how to train them, basically, financially. Next slide. Okay, this is fun. I'm going to take this out. That might be a little better. Where is my wife? Oh, there she is. Okay, so we exist to glorify God. Number one, finances are God's favorite teaching tool. And that's an interesting phrase. Finances are God's favorite teaching tool, and there are 2,350 verses in the Bible about money, and there almost half of the parables are about money. They're related to finances. So why is that? Because God has chosen to use that to teach us, and it should become a priority for us. And I know it is a priority for me to teach on finances. And I like to think that I'm becoming more like Jesus when I teach about finances, because he talked a lot about money. So if he talked a lot about money and it was important to him, then it is also important for all of us as well. And it's important for us as parents to train our children. So how do you practically do that? And God promises a legacy if we follow his instruction. That's a promise in the scriptures that are laid out. And we're not going to get into the scriptures for the sake of time, but next slide. So one thing I will say about parenting is you need to be intentional more than coincidental. So obviously, to be a good parent, you need to be intentional about some things. And really, in the area of finances, you do need to be intentional. So we're going to talk a little bit about how you practically do that. We need to be active over reactive. And I don't know about you, but as a parent, I spent maybe too much time reacting to situations as opposed to being proactive in a situation. And when it comes to money, I think we really need to be proactive and help to train and educate our children. And also understand the difference between influence over control. And as parents, we like to control. And when our children are younger, we have more control over what they do. Especially in the area of money, we can control because they don't have money. We only have money if we give it to them. So we exercise that element of control. But as children age, your interaction with them is going to change, and it should change because they mature. And our relationships with our children have matured so that our children now are actually more our friends. And we have no control. We have totally lost control because they're all adults. But because we have relationship, we still have influence. So your relationship with your children will naturally shift from control to influence. And that's important. And even scripturally, I think God wants us to be people of influence. And we have to be influential in what we do. Okay. Three things about your responsibility as a parent. So number one, it is to protect them. And again, the younger they are, the more you have to protect and keep them from harm. And hopefully over time, they're going to learn how to protect themselves. But as they are younger, you tend to protect them more. Provide. There's a scriptural mandate, 1 Timothy 5 and 8, to meet their physical needs. We have a responsibility to provide for our children. And that scripture says, basically, if you don't provide, you're worse than an unbeliever. So we are called as believers to provide for our children. And then finally, to prepare, which is really to equip them to follow Jesus. And I remember as a homeschool dad going to a conference and recognizing the most important role that I had as a father was actually to prepare my children for eternity. And that was kind of mind-blowing for me. It wasn't just preparing them to be a good citizen here on this earth, but it's preparing them for heaven. And it's like, wow, that takes education to a next level. Because it means you have a kingdom impact on your children, and you're meant to have that, and you're meant to have it actually with your finances. So MVP parenting is what Brian Holtz talks about in his book. So the M is for modeling. That's the hard part. You have to actually do this yourself. So you model it to your children. It'd be nice if you could just instruct them and they just do as they should do rather than sometimes following your example. Because I don't know about you as a parent, but I wasn't always the perfect example. Maybe I'm not always the perfect example now either. But being that example and modeling to your children is important. So do it in a way that they can see, so that they can see how you handle your money. I don't know if there are ways that you can think of about handling money that comes to mind, but one of the things I think maybe is in our giving. I mean, you used to do it with an offering plate where you just pass it in. Now it's gone. When you're giving in church, a lot of it is electronic. So are there ways that you can actually model what you do with money? So just think about that. Verbal instruction. Explain it in a way that they can understand it. So that's important. And practical opportunities. So invite them in a way that they will try. So I want to get into a little bit of how do you do this. Let's go to the next slide. So think about good when it comes to money. And think about good when it comes to your children, who you are. So good is really defined as when it fulfills a purpose. And if you go back to Genesis, in the very beginning, God defined good when what he created was fulfilling that purpose. So when we as individuals, as parents, fulfill our purpose, God defines it as good. When we move our children to act responsibly with their money, again, that is defined as good. So we want to move our children to fulfilling their purpose financially. So it's interesting. There's in Luke chapter 3, verse 8, and this is not in your notes. This is something that I've added in. There was a preacher that said, produce fruit that shows you have changed lives. Groups of people that asked this preacher a question. Anybody know who it is, by the way? Any guess as to who this is without looking at the passage of Scripture? No guesses? No guesses. Somebody said John the Baptist? Okay, who said it? down below. We got an audience down here. I'm not used to seeing an audience that I can't see. So that's an example of if you can't see something, it doesn't mean they're not there. I have a free book, the book that Brian Holtz's book, for whoever said John the Baptist. So I'm going to have to trust that you're going to come and see me after. That's the best I can do. But what's interesting is the answer to that question, because these groups of people, and I've put it interestingly here on the screen, the crowds asked, what should we do? The soldiers asked, what should we do? And I put in their CRA, asked what they should do. And I put that in there because it obviously it doesn't relate in Bible times, but CRA represents the tax collectors. So they asked, what should we do? Interestingly, in each of those answers, they just said, what should we do to demonstrate that we are producing fruit in our lives? And the first group, John said, basically, if you have two tunics, give one away. Now, what is that referencing? That's referencing something about your possessions. If you have more than you need, then give it to somebody that's in need. To the tax collector, they said, don't extort or take more than is due. So again, it's related to the tax collectors. That's how they made money. They taxed people higher than they ought to be taxed, which in some cases, CRA does that as well. But it's not necessarily CRA's fault. It's simply that we are not necessarily taking advantage of the tax code and the tax opportunities that we have to make the necessary deductions to save enough in taxes. So don't pay to CRA more than you ought to pay is my advice to you. And to the soldiers actually use their position to get money as well. So interestingly, they asked the question, what should we do? It had nothing to do with money, but every one of the answers had to do with money. So the way we produce fruit in our lives, the way we demonstrate that we are serving God in our lives, many times is how we handle money, which I find very, very interesting. So there are five things that you can do with your money. For those of you who have the notes, this is not in the notes, but there are five things, and I sum it up in four words. Live, give, owe, and grow. The biggest one is lifestyle, and that tends to be where most everyone's money goes. Give, honestly, tends to be one of the smaller categories of where money goes. The grow is the savings component, and the owe component is made up of two. You owe debt, so if you borrow, then you are obligated scripturally to repay that debt. And the other piece is to owe taxes. And the interesting thing is taxes, we should be grateful when we pay taxes. Now, many of you may not be grateful when you pay taxes. You may not be happy this time of year when it comes to completing your tax return, but you ought to be grateful because that is a symbol that the Lord has blessed you. If you owe taxes, it means you made money. That's a good thing. Nothing wrong with that. So there are five principles that go along with this. So the first principle is spend less than you earn. And I would say that is, if you do that and you continue to do that in your lifetime, you will be financially successful. Give generously. Second principle. And that actually should be your number one priority, is to give. And if you look scripturally and you search through the scriptures, you will find that the number one priority that God lays out is to give, and give generously. Avoid the use of debt or limit the use of debt. Now, in some cases, you need to borrow for certain things in life to advance, but avoid, where possible, the use of debt. Build cash flow margin and set long-term goals. So I'm not going to go into any more detail. But if you look at that live, give, oh, grow, think about what you can do with your children to divide their money. And honestly, what I do every year around this time is I look at that pie chart and I calculate the percentage of my income that goes to each of those. And you'd be surprised, well, maybe you've never done this, but honestly, I think it's worthwhile for you to do and determine what percentage would you want to go to each of those. So, how does that relate to your children? Why not consider taking those, let's go back, why not consider taking those five things and dividing them up and have your children have some money go here? So in Brian's book, he quotes, or he says, basically what he does with his children is based on their age, he gives them that amount each week. So if they're 10 years old, he gives them $10 per week. So, and that might seem a lot. That's 40 bucks a month. Sometimes it's 50 bucks a month. Maybe you're breaking the bank, depending on how many children you have. I don't know. But interesting enough, if you consider what you spend on your children and stop spending that and let them do it, just think about doing that. Calculate how much you spend, how much you actually give your children, things that you buy for them, and stop doing that. And instead, give them the money and let them decide. Maybe that's something worth thinking about, because then it forces them to manage that money. Now, they have to then learn to live with the consequences of their spending decisions. So if they run out of money, you don't bail them out. It's like, no, you spent your money, you're done. You're done until your next payday. But do it in this sort of a fashion where it's, okay, you set aside a giving category. Say, okay, you need to give that percentage. You need to set that aside. So if I had to list the priorities here of what you do first, or if you had to set those priorities, how would you do it? So there's five things. By the way, here's an interesting thing. If you want to teach your children about tax, tax them. Now, how does tax work? I'm serious when I say that, because I think it's a fun thing to help your children learn that when they go to work, they are going to be taxed. So why don't you just withhold a certain percentage that you're going to give them? So you give them $10. Okay, well, I'm going to actually give you $9. I've just withheld $1 for taxes because you're living in this house. How's that for a plan? Right? So that immediately reduces the amount you have to pay them, because there's a certain things that are deducted from their pay. Because in the real world, I don't know about you, but first when I went to work, it was like I was paid this amount and I did the math. Well, how come I didn't get that amount? Because there was a deduction for tax. So why not do a deduction? Really? Makes them think. Okay, so that's one priority, but that's one thing that basically is done for us typically if we're working, because it's deducted. What's the next thing we should do? Or we should teach our kids to do? Tithe? So that's the give category. So get them to set aside that amount on a weekly basis. What's next, do you think? Save? Okay, is there a percentage, you think, for saving? How much? 10%? So that's 30% gone if we're taxing them 10%. Right? That's 30% gone. Okay, so there's 70% left. What goes next? Pay debt? They probably don't have debt. Right? They probably don't have debt. So consider that for a moment, because here's what's going to happen. Guaranteed, your kids are going to want something that what they are receiving cannot buy. Correct? What do you normally do when that happens? So why don't you, instead of just going and buying it for them, this is just an idea. So just process this. Work with me here on this. Why don't you just say, okay, you can buy it, but you got to pay this back. This is a teaching opportunity if you were to do that. So you're not actually borrowing, but they are borrowing from you. Charge them a little bit of interest. It doesn't have to be a lot. Help them understand that if you borrow, here's what your cost is going to be. And hopefully they don't go bankrupt. Because if they don't, if they go bankrupt, you're out the money. But wouldn't it be interesting if instead of when you go somewhere and they are wanting to buy something, what do? They nag you, they nag you, they nag you until eventually you give in and you buy it for them. Wouldn't it be much better to be able to say, you have your money, you decide if you want to buy this or not. And if they don't have the money, well, too bad. You can't buy it. You save up for it. Well, it's too much for me to save up. Well, is it a priority? Maybe I can lend you the money. You pay it off over the next and set up a system where they're paying off so much so that they're actually learning that if they borrow, there's a cost to that. I don't know. It's just an idea. Does that make sense to potentially do? It's a teaching opportunity. That's how I see it. And, you know, taxes can always go up. So you can also tax them more. Bring them into the real world here. Okay, let's move on. So earning ties in multiple important financial lessons. So I would definitely encourage you to have them work as well, do some things around the house. But there's a fine line between giving them chores and paying them to do chores, in my honest opinion, because there are certain things they should be doing anyway. Like, they shouldn't be paid to make up their room, in my mind. But maybe there's extra things. I don't know, maybe shoveling the driveway could be something extra. I don't know. Or maybe that's something they should do as a chore because they're living in the house. I don't know. But I think there is a benefit to giving them a chore and potentially paying them for some of that, particularly if they want to make extra money because they want to purchase something and encourage them to avoid the use of debt, then give them extra jobs. And not necessarily a job that you don't want to do, but, you know, legitimately give them some work to do around the house and help them earn their way. So earning does set limits on giving, saving, and spending. So that goes back to the percentages that we talked about. And by the way, I would not limit the percentages to any of those categories to 10%. I would actually encourage to stretch that amount. Stretch the saving, stretch the giving. And it's interesting, if you want to talk about making disciples and being called to make disciples, then it means we should stretch in certain areas. The reason I do the calculation personally of the live, give, owe, grow is I want to add 1% per year to my giving. And if I don't track that, I'll never know. Because it's just, I think I'm giving 10%, and I have done math with people. I've looked at people's tax returns to determine how much they're giving. And people thought they were giving 10%, and they were given about 7. And they were immediately, oh, I was sure I was giving 10%. And I guess maybe part of the reason why is because they're giving on the net as opposed to the gross. But 7 is fine if you continue to stretch, but if you don't stretch, and the saving component, why do we stretch how much we save? We stretch how much we save because we look toward a goal. So give your kids a goal to shoot toward. And I would avoid potentially the idea of giving them a loan, but I think it does work as a teaching opportunity. And it connects us to our God-given responsibility to be productive. And going back to that verse in John, it says we are to produce, we are to be productive in our lives. So let's do that. And we want to help future generations find occupation that use their God-given skills to fulfill their God-given purpose. And that's something amazing to think about. We are all called to fulfill a purpose on this earth. That means our kids are as well. So I think finding the gifts of your children and giving them the opportunity to expand that. And I can say from personal experience, two of our girls particularly, one is a singer and a musician, and she just put out an album last year. She's now a worship leader. So the gifts and the talents that she developed when she was being homeschooled actually became her career. And our other daughter does a lot of work, and she's a digital designer. So again, we bought a Mac computer for her, and she developed those skills. And when she went to school, there was a course actually that she did not have to take because of the stuff that she did while she was being homeschooled. So recognizing the gifts and the talents that they have and how they can be productive in their lives, you have a prime seat for that as parents to see that. So develop those gifts and talents. So that's the part. I don't think I need to comment much more on the household chores and part-time jobs. And there's different things that they are able to do to work. All right, generosity is God's first priority for the finances he entrusts to us. And that's a powerful thought. And I recently read the story of Cain and Abel, and I found it most interesting because I was challenged with why in the world was one sacrifice rejected and one was accepted. And I don't know if you've ever thought about it, but It baffled my mind, and a lot of theologians, the theology says, well, God was interested in an animal sacrifice, so Abel's sacrifice was accepted, Cain's was rejected. And I read it, and I was like, this doesn't seem, it challenged me because they both worked. One happened to work with animals, one worked with the grain and crops and all this kind of stuff. And because he brought a grain offering, it was refused. That didn't seem right to me. And I read it closer, and it said, Abel brought an offering from the first and the best he gave to God. And about Cain, it says, in the course of time, Cain also made an offering. An interesting little thing. But you think about the course of time. The course of time is when you've accumulated, you have enough, there's no big sacrifice, because you have enough, so now I'll make an offering. So to me, that speaks to priority. And I think, well, the simple reason, Hebrews says it very clearly, Abel's sacrifice was made, or his offering was made, by faith. There was an element of faith. He gave of the first, not knowing if there was a second. Cain gave in the course of time. I believe that's why the offering was rejected. So, generosity is God's first priority. And I think for most people, and sadly Christians included many times, generosity is not even part of the picture. So, generosity should be number one, priority number one. And I talked to a financial advisor this week, and I asked him, how many conversations do you have about generosity? And he sadly had to admit, it very seldom comes up in conversation. yet it's a priority that God lays out for us. So generosity should be number one. And so help your children with that and to set that aside, because when generosity is number one, what you're doing is including God into your finances and into your children's finances. So we should not save in a way that makes us less dependent on God or encourages us to simply eat, drink, and be merry. That's an interesting statement, because the reality is when we save, we tend to accumulate that pile of money. And the fact is, the higher the pile, the more we tend to trust in it rather than God. So our trust can actually shift. And God calls us to trust in Him. And there are many things to save for and ways to save. We want to help the next generation be intentional in this strategy. So we need to help our kids save. We need to help them to give, but we need to help them to save. So you think about responsibilities. One of the things that Brian brings up in his book as well is saving, even to be able to, and when it comes to generosity, to give to your other brothers, your sisters, your parents. So he lays it out like, what do we do lots of times when our kids are younger? They don't have the finances, so we buy a gift and, oh, this is from your sister Joy or whatever, right? We tend to do it. So take that responsibility and give it back to the children and let them not only pick out, but let them pay for what they're going to buy. Then they have to learn to budget. They just can't pick anything. Oh, I'd like to give Laura this. No, they have to do it within a budget. And if they want to go beyond that budget, then they talk to you about it and determine, okay, when, and then it's like, okay, well, maybe you give Dad a little less so you can give your sister this. And I often get shortchanged, but that, I mean, that's just the way it is. But I think it's important to do these sorts of things so that the kids are actually becoming more responsible with money. But if we don't do that and we just do it for them, then they get out in the world and they got to figure it out all on their own. So I would say the sooner you do it, the better. So spending, when we recognize God's ownership of all things and our role as stewards, it makes every spending decision a spiritual decision. Now, this is an amazing statement in my mind. Every spending decision becomes a spiritual decision. Why? Because everything you have is God's. So all the money that you have, all the resources that you have, it doesn't belong to you, it belongs to God's. That means we need to consider, what does God, who is the owner, desire with these resources? So that's a change in our thinking. Our spending should align with our values and vision, a reflection of God's goals for our life. So in order for children to truly learn how to handle money God's way, they need both income and expenses. And typically, children do not have either of those. So if they don't have either of them, then create them. Create the income, give them some of the income, and then create some of the expenses. And as I said, one of the expenses is tax. So that's basically my presentation on this topic, and I wanted to leave some time for questions. And this is the challenging part, because you might put me on the hot seat and I may not know how to answer it. But this is an interesting and challenging topic, but I think you need to be practical in how you handle finances and how you help your children with their finances. And I think, too sadly, we don't give them enough authority with finances. So we should give it to them. Questions? Kathy, can you go back to the savings slide, please? Yes. Yes. Yeah, how do you think you've blown it? I would say more the do, which is giving them responsibility. So not giving them responsibility is a don't in my mind, if you know what I mean. Because, like, I think one of the things that we did that we failed to do with our kids, put it that way, is to be consistent in giving them an allowance. We were more, if they needed money, we gave it to them, rather than giving them, and like doing this sort of thing, to actually allow them to budget with money. So rather than giving as they need it, give it to them even if they don't need it, and allow them to budget it. So giving them responsibility, because, you know, even with our pay, maybe we don't need all of our pay. Technically, sometimes we need more than our pay, but we get paid a certain amount of money. We don't necessarily, but we have to then budget all of that. So, I mean, we do that as adults. So what I'm saying is the sooner the better to give that responsibility to your children. So I think a fail that we had, if I'm completely honest, is not doing that consistently. Now, I think our kids turned out okay and they're managing their money well, but a lot of it was the influence after, right? Yes. Yeah, so the question is about savings and investing, because you're right, there is a difference between savings and investing, and you really should have some money in short-term savings, which is that money technically should not be invested because it should be in a secure investment because it's meant for the short term, typically. So having some short-term money on hand, so for your children, I think it would be more savings as opposed to investing, because they're not going to have larger amounts of money to deal with. They're going to have smaller amounts. So I think a savings account, like a bank account. Now, if they're longer term, maybe you can help them a little bit on the investment side. But I think the focus more for children would be on the savings as opposed to investing. Yeah, so that's a good question. And that was kind of the point that I was making between like the chores and the giving them. There's a fine line there. And I think we do have to teach them, you know, by giving them an allowance or having them work, one or the other. And I think work is better, if I'm completely honest, than just giving an allowance. But at the same time, there are things that you are, as a parent, are doing for them and paying for them. So, and that's my point. If we stop doing a lot of that and stop just paying for things for them and said, okay, we're going to give them X amount of dollars and we're going to, so then you're responsible to do it. So that means when you go out somewhere, when you go shopping, even if you want to take it to the extreme, when you go to a restaurant, they can pay for their own. Now, not many would do that necessarily, but you could if you wanted to. That would be a nightmare probably for the waiter or the waitress, but because you got a family of five and you got five separate bills. But you get the point that I'm saying is rather than just pay everything for them, then give them an allowance. And so maybe it's a combination. Maybe it's a base salary and bonus for work. I don't know. So hope that helps. Yeah. Let me give you the mic.
My parents gave me a lot of change for allowance, loose coins and things like that, and it was based on chores and whatever. And now I feel like in my life, in this generation, a lot more stuff is done with cards and e-transfers, and it's digital money, and you're not physically seeing or handling money that often. And some people do more cash. I tend to not. But I feel like there's barriers, and maybe this is a silly problem, but I feel like I have a barrier in giving allowance to my kids, and that I just don't have cash and change on me regularly to consistently give an allowance. And I loved this idea you had of like taxing and, you know, like, I'm going to keep a dollar so you get 9 instead of 10, that kind of idea. But I will literally have to drive to an ATM, get out cash, which I can only get a 20. And then I have to like go spend that somewhere just to try to break it up. And then I have to try to like divvy it all up to try to get, okay, this dollar is mine and this is yours. And if I've got multiple kids and I'm trying to break that all apart, it becomes a huge barrier for me to easily give this consistent allowance. So I guess my question is, how do you teach those principles in an increasingly digital money world?
That is a bit of a challenging one, and I get that. You can, in most financial institutions, potentially set up accounts under your name, under, you know, in your kid's name, so you're there and they're there, so you can do transfers like that. So that's a possibility, but I think the verbal communication is important with this stuff as well. And I think the digital can create a bit of a barrier in our thinking. And as you were asking the question, one of the things that came to mind is cash is king. Because cash is important, and the old system that Compass used to use is called the envelope system. So they'd have envelopes and you'd divide the cash, and like that is so helpful. Now there are electronic apps that can do that. And there is, the one I'm thinking about. There's a FaithFi app that, which I should make you all aware of that, because you can use it. It is out of the US, but it does connect with your bank accounts in Canada, and you can actually have all your transactions tracked on there. You can divide your money according to what I showed you there, the live, give, owe, grow. You can categorize it. So a little bit off topic, but I think digital is a challenge in that regard. Overcoming it is not easy, and honestly, the easiest way to overcome it is with cash. But maybe it's monthly instead of weekly, right? So that it's, or biweekly even. Do a, you know, as you get paid, pay them sort of thing. So, FaithFi, FaithFi. So it used to be called MoneyWise, but they changed the branding to, I think, FaithFi.org will take you to the app. It means faith and finance. Yes, sorry. Thanks for that. Faith and finance. Anybody else with a question? By the way, we do have some resources at our booth down below, and you are welcome to drop by. The book is right here. This is Brian's book. That some of these ideas came from, not all of them, some of them were mine, but Financial Discipleship for Families. So who won the book can come up and grab this one if you like for giveaway. So who said John the Baptist? Well, we got a full crew down here, for goodness sake. Any questions from down here? Yep. This is, I'm used to, if you're in church, you're in the loft, but this is in the basement. Oh, there's a sub, and my goodness.
I actually didn't have a question. I just want, Want to say something that has been very helpful to me that you mentioned and that the other lady talked about, because I have kids that are smaller and in the teenage area and older. Like, so when it comes to just numbers, that with the older kids, we would do just numbers, not so more in cash, right? So we would sit down once a week and do it in numbers, and then like according to, go into the bank account. Like, I have a bank account where all my kids are under. So, and then we would once a week, do the separating of the money. And then, yeah, so that they learn how to do it. Like, and with the smaller kids, we had actually just started that about giving them a dollar a week per age, like 12 years old, $12 mm-hmm. per week as an allowance. And all the things that you talked about just combined together, we also give them extra chores for extra, like they have their chores to do, right? But they get let's say they do an extra thing, then we could, or they could, I'm sorry, I don't know how to say that, but anyways, I get nervous.
No, you're doing fine.
Okay. Like say they clean the car or something, which is not part of their chores, and they can earn an extra amount. But what was very helpful to me, because I have especially one child who could never get his chores done and never get his schoolwork done. It seemed like he just couldn't think. And when I started this, I started to make this chart where I would put 1 point if the schoolwork is not done, 1 point if the chores are not done for that day. And that's $1 off at the end of the week, like every point for that. And it has been incredibly helpful. I thought he just couldn't do it. His mind was not thinking straight. And I found out he has a perfect mind. He can do his schoolwork.
Yep.
He can finish his chores if he knows that there will be less dollars at the end of the week. He actually gets it in less than half the amount of time done than he did before. Yeah. So
that is excellent. Thank you. That's what I would call a behavioral tax. By the way, I would just add in a little point about vision for family, because that was on a slide earlier, and I meant to say how important it is for you to have a vision for your family and have your family share in that. And one of the things that we did is I asked our kids one Christmas, and they were all adults, so it's a little different stage than smaller, but I asked them all to come up with one word that defined who we are as a family. Actually, I told them I'd like to have five words. Five words that defines us as a family. Interestingly, all four, because we have one that we've brought into the family. She married in, so she's an in-law, but we consider her our own now. And all four of them had the word generosity as something that defines us as a family. Interestingly, me and Kathy, neither one of us chose that word, but our kids helped define what our vision should be as a family. So having meetings like that is very valuable. So just a side note.
I just have a quick question. So my oldest son, he's 9 and he loves to play Monopoly, and I find it's been a very useful tool. I have another kid who hates it. So do you have any suggestions or any ideas of different board games or activities that you could, that's very hands-on with a child that's learning finances that needs a visual interpretation?
Monopoly. Payday? Yeah. The game of life? The game of life? Yeah. There's a game called Cash Flow. This is when I call on the experts to answer the question that I can't answer. But that's good. Yep, question?
I was just wondering, in the examples you're talking about, you're providing the cash for the kids to learn these lessons. And I mean, my first question would be, when you are trying to factor in, okay, this is what we're spending on the kids in a month, and we're going to, you know, accommodate that amount for them. Are we talking from like toothpaste to underwear to every, like, where, what are we all considering? Not just like, is it, do you look at just clothing and maybe sports expense and eating out? Or is that just, you think that should vary family to family? So that's my first question. And then the second question would be, so now our two older sons are working, what's the transition look like from mom and dad are giving you this money to figure all these things out to now you're making the money? And how did you shift that over? And how do you navigate things like my teenage sons are figuring out what they need for a down payment on an average house? You know, what is a mortgage these days? All these kinds of things. And then they're like, but you want me to buy my own toothpaste? Like, how am I ever going to save? You know, we want them to save and to make wise decisions. But then are you shifting? Like, what do we continue to pay for? What money are we still provide? How does that all work into the teenage years?
Yeah, that's a lot of great questions. very good. The transition is something that I think is significant. And scripturally, we're called to provide. So I think you don't just not pay for things that you really should be paying for. You don't want to be all the little small things. Like, I think you continue to provide those things. But when your children are asking for something, even that are more expensive, I think that's when you start to transition and have them come up with ideas. Okay, well, we can't really afford to do that. Say whatever you need to say. But I think if this is something you really want, you should work for it. And I think, like, the transition financially for them to do that, like, I know with our kids, they kind of hit their own stride. Like, I don't know, how old was Laura when she started to work? 16. And she started her first job in a grocery store. And I think that is kind of a natural transition where she recognized that there were things that I did not want to pay for anymore for her. Because she had her own desires, and I think she also kind of recognized she might have been being a little bit unreasonable in wanting a new phone every year, right? Because she always wanted the latest phone. I don't know if, you know, that's still a thing, but it was such a big deal. And I was like, you know, your contract is not even complete on this. And that was back when it was a 3-year contract. So it was like, well, if you want a new phone, you're going to have to do that. I am not doing that, right? Basic needs in the household, yes. So if I had to do that now, the basic needs, that's where the tax comes in, right? So the 10%. Just for them to have an idea that, yeah, we're looking after the basic needs, the food, the toothpaste, the shower, all of that stuff. You're not paying rent to live here and all that stuff. But your tax, I personally love the idea of paying a tax for that, because it teaches them that even getting this, there's a portion that's going to come out. So when you go to work, the same thing is going to apply. So I don't know if I answered. Okay. Anybody else with a question? This side? My time is just about done. I think one of the big things is really for you to have a vision for your children around money and help them do and be more prepared when they come to adulthood. But keep in mind, your influence, it doesn't go away. You maintain your relationship with them, and also encourage where possible. And I'll tell you this as I close. One of my nightmares was when my son and daughter-in-law leased a car. It was like, what? You're leasing a car and you're going to have nothing left at the end? And it freaked me out. I was upset because they made this decision, because to me it just made no sense financially to lease a car and have nothing at the end of the day of value when you have to give the car back. So I learned a lesson in this, because their lease payment was so small that they were able to save money. And I encouraged them and I talked to them about paying cash for a car and having the ability to pay cash for it when their lease was done. Well, lo and behold, when the lease was done, they had $10,000 saved. And they purchased a car, I don't know what it was, but and four winter tires for $10,000. And they were able to bring the leased car back, get rid of the lease, have the car for cash, and they had no car payment anymore. This allowed them then to be able to get a mortgage and get their own place. And honestly, if they had a lease or if they had a loan for the car, they would not have been able to do it. They would not have been able to afford it. So that just that influence, even as adults, was significant to encourage them to handle their finances right, to avoid the use of debt where possible. It allowed them to get into their own home. And to me, it's just exciting for me as a parent when I see our kids being able to make their finances work. And I believe it's partially, at least, because they're following God's principles in finance. And so that is my encouragement to all of you, is to seek and understand biblical financial principles and to live that out in your family. Practice it, model it, instruct them in it, and they will walk in it and they will appreciate you for it. One of the last things that I will say to you is we have some studies down there that you can do. They're 6-week studies. We have a curriculum that's a 13-week study that is meant for homeschooling or high school. So you're welcome to come down and there is a 35% discount on the ebook that you can get, and that's only for this conference. So see us at Kathy, my wife, is right over there by that screen. So see one of us and chat with us if you have any questions. We'd love to be here for you. And thank you for being a great audience today.